Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in. This is the second part of a special two-part episode featuring Jason Ault, our first ever three-peat guest, returning to talk about Eternal Masters. We also want to let everybody know that in the month of July, we're going to give something back to our patrons. As the result of a special donation, we have a box of Eternal Masters, and we're going to be giving it away to our patrons. So, if you ever wanted to be a patron of Commanderin, now's a good time to join. We're going to work out and announce the details and do the final drawings in August. So stay tuned for more details. And in the meantime, head on over to patreon.com/CommanderinMTG and join our community there. We are grateful for your support. We hope you enjoy the show. Recording.
One.
Recording. Recording.
One.
Two.
Oh my god.
Well, wait, you gotta figure out what the sequence is.
Whoever says one first is one. Whoever says two first
is two. I'll be three. I'm always three.
One.
Two.
Three.
One.
Two.
Three.
One.
Two.
Trois.
Done.
God. That's not the way it works.
We're done. All right. Parliamentary procedures notwithstanding. Go ahead. What was the funny commander sprue?
Yeah. Your mentioning it reminded me that I wanted to make that the first news item, and I thought about it this morning, but lost it all. This morning was a little bit rough because I was playing Commander until 2 a.m.
What? You played Commander? I don't believe you.
Yeah, I know, right? I brought over a variety of decks, including my constructed decks, so that tells you where the focus was. But I brought over Kalemni and Azuri and a selection of earlier pre-constructed decks.
Ooh.
And we played like three games and did really well. I had a total newbie mistake where I missed rapid hybridization. I missed that Jareth, that Leonin Titan.
He gets big when he blocks.
Yeah, he gets big when he blocks and
protection for a white,
but he gets protection from a color of your choice for one white. And so I went to zap him. I actually attacked in with this massive creature and he just blocks and he's going to eat my creature. And I'm like, well, screw this. I'll use my rapid hybridization that I was saving for Kalemni. Nope. Total newbie error.
Protection from blue.
Yep. That's exactly what he did. And I was like, that really sucks, dude.
It sucks that you use the activated ability of your creature that's been on the table for a while, and I have untapped white mana source.
Yeah. How? I was like, that's cheating.
How very dare you. How very dare you, sir.
I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And I'm Sean Watson.
And we are Commanderin.
Yep.
And on that note, gentlemen, I have to go and look after an angry 2-year-old. And blessed be Phyrexia. Bye!
Oh, my. Oh, Jason, thank you for coming on. Oh, we lost everybody.
He originated the call, didn't he?
Uh-huh. I guess we figured that out.
Whoops. Well, Audacity's still going, so...
Yeah, that's fine. Well, we know who originated the call, don't we, Nate?
Is Nate not here yet? Oh, there he is.
So I gotta say all that again?
Yeah, we didn't hear any of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
My first pick is Toxic Deluge. 2 and a black sorcery as an additional cost to cast. Toxic Deluge. Pay X life. All creatures get minus X. X until end of turn. It's around $10 to $13. There aren't many board wipes that can take care of both Ulamog and Gaddock Teague. In fact, there aren't many board wipes that you can cast against Gaddock Teague at all. So, that's why this is one of my favorites.
This takes care of Thrun and other really annoying shroud stuff like that, too.
Yeah.
Yep, Avacyn's gone. Get out.
Yeah, it's a very nice card.
I think they made this for to be legacy playable also, and I think it mostly achieved that goal. I mean, this is, yeah, anything to bring the price down, I think is fine.
Hmm.
This was in the Alluro precon, correct?
Yes, it was.
It's a very popular precon.
So we've heard, but who believes Data? No, it's not fair.
He's not here to defend himself.
That's right. It's not fair.
No, it's so, perfect. We should do.
Yeah, Nate, you were looking for a Toxic Deluge. So, Jason, you think this is one of the ones that'll get smashed in prices?
I'm hoping so. Like, I think the demand really is going to be outstripped by the supply very nicely.
Yeah.
I think this is just. It's just sort of like, hey, there weren't too many of these precons. Everybody wanted Mind Seize. Nobody was really all too keen on the Alluro one. And Legacy is taking a non-zero number of copies of this card. So I think, especially being printed at Rare, I think we could see some nice price relief for sure.
Hmm.
At least in the short term. I don't know what this is going to... It could rebound long term, but like being printed at non-mythic, I'm inclined to say that we're going to get enough copies that...
Or the supply is going to outstrip the demand pretty nicely, you think, right?
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, how much will Eternal Masters impact the Legacy or Vintage scene?
I mean, that's... I think it's going to go on a card-by-card basis. I don't think you can categorically say what the set's going to do as much as you can say... Well, I think it's going to be different, you know? Like, I think Legacy is going to want Entomb a lot more than it wants Toxic Deluge. It's going to want Ikrid a lot more than it wants Regal Force, you know? So I think if Legacy primarily wanted this card, you would see it disappear 2 to 3 copies at a time per sideboard, you know? Versus an EDH deck wants one copy. So I think the EDH stuff, it's going to take a lot more decks to soak up the copies. So that's why I think the stuff that's just EDH, the prices will be way more impacted than stuff that Legacy can help by soaking. Like, Sinkhole is going to disappear 4 copies at a time versus, you know, Malicious Affliction, which will disappear 1 copy at a time. So I think you got to take it on a case-by-case basis. I think there is overlap between Legacy and EDH on Toxic Deluge, so I think you could see the copies disappear faster than something that's going to be EDH only.
But if you see this dip below $10, you should pick up at least a copy, right?
I would say that it's going to dip below 10. It's barely above $10 to begin with.
What's your second card, Nate?
All right, my next card is... It'll probably be like the Comet Storm of this set in that... People who are looking for financial value will be disappointed, but
Void?
It's still a great card to play in the right in the right deck. Yeah, Void.
Yep.
3 black and red sorcery. Choose a number. Destroy all artifacts and creatures with converted mana cost equal to that number. Then, target player reveals his or her hand and discards all non-land cards with converted mana cost equal to the number. So it's surgical mass removal. Plus, you get to harass a player by looking at his hand and taking stuff out of it.
I wish this scaled better for EDH. That's the only problem. They weren't thinking about that when they printed this card, and it doesn't scale well for multiplayer, unfortunately.
I still love playing it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Because it scales nicely on the first ability when you're like, hey, how about 3? You know? How about 1? You know? So, yeah, it's solid.
What do you think of the new art, though?
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah, it is.
So bad.
I like the older battle mech better.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Why not? I don't know. There's some new art where it's cool, and there's some new art where you're like, why did they bother? So it's like half and half for me. For every Maelstrom Wanderer, there's a Goblin Trenches. For every Vindicate, there's a Giant Solifuge.
Yeah, Giant Solifuge. That's insane. That's also terrible art.
And that was fine art before. It fit the whole Gruul aesthetic. I thought. Wow. Whatever.
Yeah. Well, we're all spent after that, aren't we?
Not everything's for me, I suppose.
This next one is.
All right, my next pick. Price of Progress, one in a red, instant. Price of Progress deals damage to each player equal to twice the number of non-basic lands that player controls. It's around $5 to $6 now. This is the best mass burn spell for the mana, and it's at instant speed.
Yeah, crazy. This is one of the ones that is just being pounded into the dirt, isn't it?
Which is, it's printed in uncommon. And this was already, you know, in the premium set, but this is the first time it'll be a good-looking foil.
Mm.
Because those premium foils are just trash, you know. They did three of those premium decks, and then they stopped because everyone hated them. So,
is that why they stopped?
I don't know why they stopped. Man, you... But I don't like Commander's Arsenal foils. I don't like FTB foils. I don't like any of those foils. I think they're trash. So even though something like Price of Progress, Chain Lightning, you know, Cabal Therapy was in a set. Maybe Hymn to Torak. You know, even though that stuff was available foil before, this is the first time you get an actual good-looking foil.
Yeah.
So you like high-contrast art in foils?
I don't like the foiling process. I thought they curled too easily, and I thought the foils looked cheap. So, hey, like, we have technically a foil Sylvan library before, but now we have a decent, you know, a decent foil process one. It's not going to curl up as much. And so Price of Progress, I could really see this getting smashed, and I actually don't have a problem. Because here's what people are complaining about. They're like, well, sure, now we have a Force of Will, but we don't have dual lands. So this isn't enfranchising anybody and letting them access Legacy. And then they complain about the reserve list. And I do not want to have the reserve list argument again. If you don't like the reserve list, I don't care. You're wrong. Quiet. Don't tweet at me about the reserve list. I don't want to talk to you about the reserve list. You're wrong. So the fact that you have uncommon Chain Lightning, uncommon Price of Progress, the fact that Lightning Bolt and Young Pyromancer and, you know, Pyroblast and all that crap is in this set. If you can build a burn deck that is not terrible for reasonably cheap, and if this enfranchises players and gives them copies of these cards so that they can actually play the format, I recommend just building a burn deck and then, like, trying to win prizes and build your Legacy deck that way. Like, if you weren't playing in 1996 like me and you didn't get cheap dual lands, what do you want? Not everything has to be for you. You started playing Standard 6 months ago and now you're upset that you can only play Modern? You can't play Legacy and Vintage? Like, not everything's for everybody. So the fact that you could actually build a decently cheap Legacy burn deck with the stuff in Eternal Masters, you know, smashing those prices, like, that's even better. This is going above and beyond, frankly, what this set needed to do. So I'm super happy with the fact that Price of Progress is going to be cheaper.
Yeah, that's a good card.
And it's fine in EDH, too, especially if you're going to copy it with Riku or something like that, or recast it with Goblin Dark Dwellers or something like that.
So we don't focus on Legacy or Vintage very much on our podcast, and even in our playgroup, of course, I don't think we have played that since it was called Type 1 and Type 1.5. But that's a good point about being able to build a fairly inexpensive burn deck with the cards in Eternal Masters. So if somebody is trying to get into Legacy or Vintage, then you'd suggest doing a burn deck, using a burn deck, rather?
I mean, maybe not Vintage, but definitely Legacy. I think it'd be fine.
Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, you're a combo deck where any seven spells in your deck can win you the game. But if you're in Legacy, you can play Fire Blast and Price of Progress, and you can deal a lot more than three damage for one card, and that's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, there's something to consider.
I just think any way that you can enfranchise players above and beyond what the set was originally intended to do. I think it's not going to make people happy, but it will make their complaints a little bit more ridiculous to somebody like me, which I count as a victory.
So you think price is going to be smashed in price and it'll stay in actual dollar cost, I mean, and it will stay low?
I really don't know how many copies are going to get soaked up long term, but yeah, I think this could smash the price of Price of Progress and Chain Lightning fairly effectively. Especially because Chain Lightning, it was like, well, how much of that set did anybody crack? Like, it was common, but, you know, a common from the first four sets isn't, you know, it doesn't really mean the same thing as common from, you know, M15.
Yeah, I was surprised to see Chain Lightning, actually.
I was delighted to see it, but yeah, that kind of was a surprise. But I think that's what they're trying to do. They're like, look, you can build a burn deck where if you're not playing another color, you can use the fetch lands that you got from Standard. And if the only expensive card in your deck is Badlands, then that's still, you know, you can build the deck.
Yeah, you're doing all right at that point.
Yeah. So if you can get away with a $300 Legacy deck, like, what are you complaining about? Because you can win a Legacy tournament, especially at a store level with it's like five rounds. You could absolutely win with a burn deck. So, I mean, you're gonna punish some slow starts out of people. And you're just a, you know, you're a seven spells combo deck. So you're definitely gonna punish slow starts from people. So I don't see a problem with that. I'm happy that Chain Lightning and that sort of stuff is in this set.
Yeah, we played a lot of red 96 and before, and I recall many volleys of Chain Lightning. It was a blast. I mean, just from a Timmy perspective, it's very fun.
Oh, I don't know why more people don't play Chain of Acid in EDH, frankly.
Chain of Acid?
Yeah. That just seems awesome to me. It's the one where you can...
I don't even...
Yeah, exactly. You don't even know what it does, yeah. Chain of Acid's the green one.
Oh, look at that.
Three and a green sorcery. Destroy target non-creature permanent. Then, that permanent's controller may copy this spell and may choose a new target for that copy.
Wow!
What is more chaotic than that? There's so many targets...
Wow, someone lost a finger for that
one.
Yeah,
it's like, are you done? Because this was like a one-on-one spell nobody played, but in a big old EDH game, you're like, okay, you done? No, I'm going to blow up your thing. Well, I'll blow your thing up back. So you could reasonably, like, if you get two players colluding, you could probably wipe quite a bit of, of stuff out. So
yeah, that third player really hurts.
Yeah, so, it's a... the whole chain... cycle is it's fun times, but for whatever reason, Chain of Acid never really caught on in EDH, and I don't know, because I think the more stuff you blow up, the more of your own stuff you're going to lose, so that it's probably a little too fair. You probably want to be blowing up two permanents of theirs and zero of yours, as opposed to X of yours and X of theirs.
Yeah, but what fun it is. I mean, you shoot somebody's land, you cast something large, and then the next turn you shoot somebody's land.
I think it says not land right? Permanent.
It's a non-creature permit.
Oh, right,
permit.
Yeah, non-creature permit. Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So you have a big beater out, and then you just start you just start tempting them to destroy their own mana base, essentially. Oh, mana base. We're destroying lands again? That's crazy.
I didn't think we did that in green.
No, we don't.
I thought we frowned on that.
Wave of Vitriol?
Oh, Wave of Vitriol, yeah.
Yeah, that's appropriately named because that's what sets over the table.
Yes, and it should be Wave of Salt as well. My first pick is Sylvan Library, which may be my favorite Magic card ever. It's an egregious color pie violation, and that's Sensei's Top with an upside, especially in EDH. At the beginning of your draw step, you may draw two additional cards. If you do, choose two cards in your hand drawn this turn. For each of those cards, pay four life or put the card on top of your library. So, hey, how about that?
It's cheating.
It is cheating. It really is. And right now, I looked it up. I can't believe it's a $58 card. The Legends
version. That's because of 93-94. That's why you see such a big price divergence between the Legends version and, like, 4th and 5th edition. That's because of the 93-94 format, where you can only play the older versions in that.
Oh, yeah.
That's what's doing that. Because you can still get the 4th and 5th edition for reasonable. I'm a degenerate, so, like, all of my Sylvan Libraries are alt 4th edition.
I didn't realize people are still playing the 93-94
format. Oh, they're not. They're not. The fact that nobody played Tiny Leaders didn't stop Tiny Leaders cards from spiking in price for like a whole year.
Yeah, it's true.
But I mean, there's a non-zero number of people playing 93-94, and the fact that like there are so few cards to go around means any amount of attention they get, dealers are going to be like, oh, this is a thing. And there are so few copies that it's real easy to trigger the market by buying three copies. Because buying three copies could be all of the copies on TCG Player.
That's true.
So then everyone's like, well, I'm just going to mark my copies up. So it's real easy to trigger the market when there are a few copies out there. And everybody can look at the card and instantly know exactly why it's spiking.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't take much. So that's why you have $60 Selvan libraries, and you don't have to have tens of thousands of people playing 93-94 for them to have a real effect on the market.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, there's still reasonable fourth and fifth edition copies out there, you know, with the white border that, you know, they're perfectly playable. I don't like the Commander's Arsenal foiling, I keep saying. So this gives us Selvan libraries that are foil that look good. So I think that is going to be great.
Yeah, that foil was $100 though.
Yeah, it looks like crap, and it was $100.
So what you're saying is, before you open every pack of Eternal Masters, you close your eyes and wish for a foil Sylvan Library, or a Mana Crypt, actually.
I mean, how many foils in this set would you like not be that upset to open? Foil Malicious Affliction, you know. Foil Natural Order. Even if you're, you know, going for non-mythics. Like, even something like Foiled Young Pyromancer or... You know, like, there's so much in this set that's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I mean, Selvan Library is the dream, right? But it goes right in a deck.
Yeah, it does. My next one is Vindicate, one that I'd like to see in foil, especially with this art. This is beautiful. One, a white and a black sorcery, destroy target permanent.
Boom. And that was, it was a card that gets played a little bit in Legacy. You know, those like the rogue dead guy decks and stuff like that. Vindicate was weird. Like, when you were paying $25 for a Vindicate, that didn't feel 100% correct to people.
It really didn't.
He's like, why is this really? It's expensive because of a little bit of Legacy play. I have black-white EDH decks that have, like, Unmake. They don't have Vindicate, but if this is a $5 card, then yeah, you know what? Goes in there.
Unmake and Utter End.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, good cards. And my third is, again, it speaks to the Timmy in me. It's Sneak Attack for 3 and a red enchantment. And I don't think a lot of people actually have been exposed to this before. It's a mythic in Eternal Masters, but we're going to see it a lot.
The problem is Legacy soaks up 4 copies at a time.
Even at 4 mana.
Yeah, because if you're paying 5 mana for an Emrakul, and that's the dream, right? A 5 mana Emrakul is very good.
A 5 mana Emrakul is not bad at all. That's great.
With haste.
The art on this is more fun, too. It's better than the sleeping dragon or goblin sneaking up on a dragon.
I actually disagree. I like the saga art much, much better.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
I always thought it was too cartoony. But, you know.
Yeah, to each his own. I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
I would trade you this one for the saga one straight up.
This one's great for EDH because it's one of the effects that puts a creature into play and then it sacrifices it as opposed to exiling it at the end of the turn.
Yeah, and then you just, like, fling it at them with Brian instead of letting it get sacrificed.
Yeah.
And this causes headaches with Lifeline and all kind of fun saga block stuff.
Hmm. So we talked about the cards that are in the set. You mentioned earlier that there were some things, that this set was glaring in its omissions, and Damnation's one of them, so we hope that's in Conspiracy, but we'll see. What else is missing?
Flusterstorm. Not the EDHiest card ever, but Flusterstorm would have been right at home in this set. Maybe a second white mythic. I guess Caracas was the other white mythic.
Yeah.
Show and Tell.
Right, yep.
Imperial Recruiter. Linvala. Like, there's all kind of stuff that could easily have just been jammed in this set. So,
yeah.
I mean, they can't do everything, but there were just a few cards that everybody, I think, kind of thought. Like, a lot of people thought Imperial Seal was going to be in this set, and I'm like, I don't really know that that's... The P3K stuff is just so hard to reprint, you know? Like the FTV Annihilation or whatever.
Burning of Xinyi.
Yeah, you could put some of that stuff in there, and it brings the price down from like over, you know, hundreds of dollars down to like sub $50, which is fine, but you can't really do that too much. It's just so hard. to be like, all right, we got a bunch of MS, you know, cards that are like $30 plus here's a card that's $300, you know, for something like Imperial Seal, it's, do you really want to smash that price to smithereens like that? So it's tough. I didn't really expect Imperial Seal, but I didn't expect Vampiric Tutor to be mythic either. So like this set was pretty surprising in a lot of ways. But I think when they spoiled Sneak Attack, everybody thought Show and Tell would be in the set too, and it wasn't. So I don't know. I think people also expected stuff like Vendilion Click that's already in Modern Masters, which I didn't. But I think people kind of thought there would be some overlap that there wasn't. Flusterstorm could easily be in Conspiracy. Damnation could easily be in Conspiracy. You know, maybe Show and Tell even. So there's some of this stuff that, like you talk to me January 2017 about omissions, I think, right? Like when we've had Commander 2016 and we've had Conspiracy 2, like we're not done getting reprints this year. So I'm not too worried about it. Flusterstorm could easily be in something like that. But again, like, does every Legacy card have to be $30 if there are $300 dual lands? You know? Because Flusterstorm is not the barrier to entry into Legacy.
No, it is not. Who do you think, this is an awkward, there's, we have a section in here about like big finance losers and big finance winners from Eternal Masters. I don't know. Do you think there's anything worth talking about there in that sense?
I think I may have like offhand mentioned there are a few cards that are like, I think are going to get smashed. Like I think Natural Order, basically anything that's not really going to be in Legacy is going to get smashed more than the stuff that is in Legacy. Because just the nature of EDH being a one of format, you need four times as many decks to soak up the same number of copies. So that's why Modern right. Masters, you like Tarmogoyf. Well, four Tarmogoyfs, which are tough to open because they're mythic, is going to build a new deck. But like one copy of Regal Force is going to build a new Legacy deck. One copy of Sylvan Library is going to build a new EDH deck versus
right.
You're going to need multiple copies of something like Caracas, you know. So, I think the stuff that's EDH only, and there are quite a few cards like that. Like, no one's playing Maelstrom Wanderer or Goblin Trenches or Glare of Subdual or Call the Skybreaker in Legacy, you know?
Right.
So Shardless Agent is going to take four times as much work to bring the price down as something like Sphinx. Well, Sphinx of Steelwind, I think it's played in a little bit of Reanimator, but for the most part, that's an EDH card. So I think it's going to take a lot more work to bring down the price of Baleful Strix versus something like, you know, Isochron Scepter. So I think the real finance losers are going to be the cards that are only in one of formats. I think we're going to see a much more profound dip on something like Worn Power Stone, Ashnod's Altar, you know, stuff like that. Like Worn Power Stone is going to be absolute dirt because it gets played in one of formats plus it's an uncommon.
Yeah.
Like, that's just going to get... It's going to get smashed. You know, Goblin Charbelcher is going to get smashed, even being at rare. So, some of the stuff that I thought was going to tick up a little bit over time, I took a bath on a few of these cards, and it's whatever. Like, nobody cares about hurting my feelings as a guy hoarding cards when they get the cards they want. Like, Malicious Affliction's going to... You know, I'm going to take a bath on that, and it's fine. I'm Unexpectedly Absent... That had a chance to not be a dollar rare in a year, and now it's going to be. Serendip Efreet, took a bath on that. It's fine. It happens. So, for the most part, the big losers are just going to be your Karmic Guide. You know, it's going to be anything that gets played primarily in EDH. And the stuff that gets played primarily in Legacy is not going to be impacted as much. And I don't know to what extent that effect is going to offset changes in rarity. But I don't think anything is going to gain necessarily, but you might see some stuff recover in the long term. Like I think Mana Crypt could get back up to like $200 just because I think there's so much demand from EDH.
Yeah.
That you could see that just because I don't know how many copies are going to get injected. But I think it will take a long time for that to happen. And I think Sneak Attack will recover right away. I think Jace the Mind Sculptor and Vamp Tutor will recover right away. And I think, I don't know, like having an equivalent number of balances and Jace the Mind Sculptors in the set is silly.
When they change the rarity, or actually when they put these at different rarities, do you think they were looking purely at limited, or were they looking at the financial aspect?
I think they were doing both. I think there are shifts that were for limited and shifts that were for financial purposes. I think Imperius Perfect at rare was for limited purposes. I think Mother of Runes at rare was for financial purposes.
Hmm. They just did a reprint of Mother of Runes too.
Uh-huh. I don't know. It could be Mother of Runes at a common could have been just really stupid and limited. I think Sinkhole at rare, like, that's perfect.
Yeah, that works really well.
Because that just, it didn't feel common.
No, it didn't. In fact, when I saw it spoiled, I was like, wait, this isn't a rare card? I figured for sure that was rare and on the reserve list.
Mesa Enchantress, at uncommon, it's like, wow, that's for limited purposes, you can tell.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Just so, like, you can't reliably even bother with Mesa Enchantress at rare. Like, you're not even, you open that and then you go after enchantments, and if you don't open that, you don't bother. Like, that sucks. Like, that needs to be uncommon. And honestly, it was a quarter rare before who even cared. So a lot of the rarity shifts, like, even from a financial perspective, I really don't have a problem with.
Yeah. So what do you open? What do you draft when you start opening these?
I think there are so many defined archetypes, I think you can just take the rare and go for it. Because I think there's like the sneak attack / reanimator type build. There is an enchantress build in here.
Yep.
But you're going to build around your rares more so than your mythics. I think reanimator is very, very strong. Because there's a whole cycle of the three colorless and three colored creatures, and any single one of those is great for reanimating. You just take the 6 damage and you're like, all right, I'm running the board. Like, you can't, it's so hard to beat a Visara or an Arcanus or even a Jareth.
Right.
So I think there's the obvious elf build, the black green elf build. The problem with Imperius Perfect and Heritage Druid being rare, I think, is offset pretty nicely by Wirewood Symbiote and Timberwatch Elf being an uncommon. You know, one of my favorite elves ever printed, Shaman of the Pack. You know, that card is just stupid. Like, anytime I play Nath, that's my win condition.
Yeah.
Because it's like, here, take 25 because I have so many tokens.
Oh, you have a Nath deck?
Oh, yeah. I love it. I have so many black Punisher enchantments in it. It's dumb. And I'm playing almost all elves, but I have the, what's the guy in your, I'm terrible with card names.
What does it do?
Sadistic Hypnotist. That's the card.
Mm. Nate runs a Nath deck as well.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I run Painful Quandary and, stuff like that. No Mercy. So I think Nath is fun. And just having Shaman of the Pack just tutorable.
Yeah.
Is dumb. So, like, there's all kind of draft archetypes. So I think you can just take your rare and build around it.
You'll look at the rare and then base your deck on the first pack?
I mean, yeah. And then that's
depending,
the problem.
Right?
You can't draft this a ton. So it's like, by the time you get good at this, it's like, wow, I've spent $300 drafting this set. Great.
Are you going to play it online?
Nah, I don't do that. So
yeah,
I'm just going to draft this at the LGS, which is fine. Like, I'm fine rare drafting. I think Blue-White Flyers is going to be something that people aren't going to fight you for, necessarily. And I think that's going to be... I think that lends itself the best to your commons and uncommons.
Yeah, that's true. And that's where most of the work is done.
Because I feel like the elf deck really relies on you to get those rares. Whereas, like, all right, I got 3 Aven Rift Watchers and 2 Mana Wars and, like, 4 Squadron Hawks and a Peregrine Drake. And all of a sudden, I'm just smashing people. Because they can't deal with Jetting Glass Kite with Counterspell backup. It's like,
yeah, that's...
it's like, cool, you got a Regal Force, but like, I just Counterspelled it, and meanwhile, I'm just playing a Flyer every turn. So I think there's a Goblin deck in there, or like, you know, like the Get to Slinger, Keldon Champion, Flame Jab deck.
Yeah.
I think Rancor, you have May Enchantress, Monk Idealist. Or not a Monk Idealist, what's the thing? You got Mesa Enchantress and Glimmer Point Stag and that sort of thing.
That's it.
So I think there's so many... This is such a well-designed set for limited that they, the stuff they shifted in rarity made sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, as it unfolded. I mean, we could see that the rarity was tilted toward limited. We didn't have enough information to see if the rarity affected MTG finance very much. We knew that printing, you know, Mana Crypt at Mythic meant that it'll go up if a lot of people adopt Legacy.
Which I'd like to see, but with Star City not really doing as much Legacy as they used to, it's going to be tough.
Mm-hmm.
I wish Star City still did the Classic as often as they used to. Because if you...
Why'd they stop?
I don't know. It's everything's slowing down. They're not broadcasting as many Grands Prix as they used to. Star City, I think, having an A team and a B team. With the fact that they're running GPs now, they would rather run a GP and an SCG Open than an SCG Open and a Classic, I think.
Mm.
So they're definitely not going to do all three in a weekend.
Yeah.
But it was nice to have like an SCG Classic just like on a Saturday Legacy tournament, and then they have the Open in a different part of the U.S. Like, I thought that was good. But Star City isn't as committed to Legacy as they used to be, and it sucks because I think it's a good format, but at the same time, it's increasingly so close to Vintage. And I think in the next 5 years, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see them add a set called Extended that is newer than Modern.
Right.
Or not a set, a format. So Modern goes all the way back to Modern Border, and Extended is the last three blocks or whatever. So I wouldn't be surprised if Modern becomes too expensive and they have to add a new format. Which, yeah, it's fine. I mean, Modern, some of those cards are very old.
Yeah, some of them are. That's an interesting question, sort of, that relates to the health of Magic. Is it healthier to keep inventing new formats that restrict the cards to more recent sets?
Yeah, it is, because what they envisioned for Modern was people being able to keep their standard cards and then, hey, we can play this other format. It's like, hey, Fairies rotated out of standard, but don't worry, you can play it in Extended. That was their goal. But Extended was a little bit too boring, because it was like, hey, remember last month's standard decks? Because that's the whole Extended format. Extended became double standard, essentially.
Yeah.
So if they can get rid, but if they can have it to the point where Extended is like the last four blocks or whatever, you just don't sell all your cards at rotation. You keep your deck, and then you can play your deck in another format, and it'll be competitive in the Extended format. And then, you know, Modern's a little more expensive. Modern is the set you have to, like, Extended becomes the set you keep your cards into. Modern becomes the set you trade into. Legacy becomes the set you buy into.
Hmm.
And then you can't play Vintage. Sorry. Sort of a deal, you know? So I think that's probably going to happen in maybe like the next 5 years, which is fine. Have more formats.
Yeah.
Because Block is stupid. I like Block, but it's so stupid to play Block.
Does anyone still do Block?
They sometimes. It's weird. I think it's more of an online thing. I don't know. Like, I used to play Block, and even terrible blocks like Kamigawa Block and what was the other terrible block? But they were fun to play just as a block, just because every card was terrible. So you had to build a deck out of terrible pool, and everybody else did too. But it stopped being like a PTQ format and stuff like that a while ago, so people stopped playing it.
Yeah.
Getting rid of that and adding something new entirely would be fine with me. I miss Two at a Giant, but that's a personal...
Oh, Two at a Giant is a blast. I'm surprised that it's not played more frequently.
Like, but sanction-wise, I mean, like, they used to have PTQs and GPTs and stuff, and now they did that for, like, 1 year, and then they're like, nah, we don't do this anymore.
Well, it's a filthy casual format, isn't it?
No, honestly, because the spikiest people were hardcore about it. You get to play with, like, your best spiky friend.
Mm-hmm.
People like those team formats when it's, like, pros. Like, who wouldn't want to see, like, Huey Jensen and Owen Turtenwald in a Two-Headed Giant tournament?
Yeah, that's true. So why'd they abandon it?
I don't, you know, man, why'd they abandon player rewards, and why'd they abandon, you know, the DCI record in favor of Planeswalker points? Like, they just make decisions.
Hmm.
And they have more information than us, so it's not like we can say, hey, they did it wrong, because they know stuff we don't, so...
Right.
Far be it for me to criticize the most popular, longest lasting, best selling, best played, you know, card game in the whole world.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
How many games have come and gone since Magic started? You know, how many games have Look at Yu-Gi-Oh's secondary market. Everyone that wants to do away with the reserve list, look at Yu-Gi-Oh's secondary market. Well, they'll take a mythic rare and reprint it in the next set as a common. You know who eats it is the dealers. They're like, they paid $55 on the buy list for that $100 card. Now it's 55 cents. It's not the players who eat it. It's the dealers.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of reprint policy is ridiculous. And at the same time, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is selling a lot of packs of cards.
Yeah, because it's kids begging for a booster pack at the checkout at the grocery store.
Yeah, I would never. Just based on my picks alone, I'm in favor of getting, you know, fun, janky cards in the hands of more players. And for me, that means, frankly, it means reprinting some of the stuff on the reserve list. Now, I admittedly don't care as much about the financial aspect, and I know that it needs to be done intelligently because it's the underpinnings of the entire economy and the entire game, and the game will continue to grow as long as there is scarcity of cards. And so I'm not advocating just, you know, reprinting dual lands at common. That would be foolish. It would be dumb. And at the same time, I think it's really cool, and there's really nothing wrong in our particular format with proxying if your meta's okay with that. But, you know, coming up with some kind of inkjet printed scrub land and playing that and trying to have any sort of legitimacy at a store, or
you don't need scrub land in EDH though.
Well, I'm just saying.
So,
right?
But that's what's like, great about EDH, because like the reserve list, it's not hurting EDH that much. It's a bulk rare format because your mana curve starts at 6 in EDH sometimes. Like you can play Visara the Dreadful in EDH, where you couldn't play her in Standard at all. Just because, you know, you can Mana Reflection is a $20 card. Why? Because Mana Reflection is attainable in EDH. So you're doing so much ramp of basic lands and stuff like that. Like, cracking a fetch land and getting a scrub land is not that much better than cracking a fetch land and getting
Godless
Shrine. You know, it's not that much better that it's going to win you a game, because you go a little bit slower. You play lands that come into play tapped sometimes. I play a ton of temples in my EDH decks.
Oh, the temples are great.
Yeah, temples are so good. So yeah. Why do we need scrubland in a format where Temple of Malady is fine? I feel like you don't. I feel like basic lands are so good in EDH because there's so many spells like Boundless Realms that just scale off that. So what's holding you back? You know, is it the Sentinel Centaurs on the or Sentinel Hierophants or whatever on the reserve list? Like, what is on the reserve list that's hurting EDH that you don't have a perfectly acceptable alternative?
No, nope. All good points.
So I don't think it's necessary for our intents and purposes. And I think they're going to print new cards for EDH all the time. And some of the stuff may even like be a little bit better than the stuff that's on the reserve. Because there's some goofy stuff on the reserve list just because they didn't know. Like Herald of Sarah is on there. And there's some stuff from Saga that you're like, really? That's not on the reserve list? So it's, they just didn't know at the time. So there's wacky stuff on there. And I think the reason they have to do it is because they have to tell the people that are taking the biggest risk, which is the stores that have hundreds of thousands of dollars in inventory, that they're going to sit on, because that's how the players get the cards conveyed to them. They need to say to those people, look, we're going to honor our promise to you, and we're not going to make you lose thousands of dollars overnight. You know, have faith enough to pay buy list prices on these, because players benefit a lot from the secondary market. They get buy list value for their cards they don't want anymore. They pay a reasonable amount for the cards they do want. They get them conveyed to them. They don't have to sit on the stuff they don't want. They can get it when they need it. Like, players benefit enormously from the secondary market, and yet they want something that is directly antagonistic to the secondary market, which is Wizards directly breaking their promise vis-a-vis the reserve list. And when you really look at what players are complaining about, they're literally basically complaining about dual lands. There's not a whole lot else on the reserve list that they're upset about. So, Wizards said part of the reserve list is they're not going to do functional reprints, so they're never going to do, Snow-Covered Tundra, you know, in a booster pack. They're not going to do that. So, the fact that you can get away with not needing the dual lands in EDH and everything else you need it's fine. There are alternatives. You know, there are ways around whatever's on the reserve list, and not all that expensive. Because like Sarah Sanctum could be a 200. If that were $200 card, it wouldn't surprise me. But it's not. It's as old as it is, and it's still only like $50. But it's that good in EDH. Like, I don't think it's that big a deal. Like, the fact that you don't have Tundra is not worth basically introducing so much volatility into the secondary market that it's not worth. I wouldn't, if they broke the reprint policy and broke the reserve list, like, I wouldn't deal in cards anymore at all. I'd sell everything. So,
would you really?
Oh, yeah. I would get out as soon as possible.
Because it means that nothing will hold its value.
Well, there's nothing stopping them from doing a $2 Eternal Masters pack and just making everything dirt. Like, why would they? There's nothing to stop them from, like, for $150 having a whole set. I realize that not everybody thinks that argument is compelling as I do. And it's sort of a slippery slope argument to an extent, but I really, if they got away with the reserve list, I would sell everything because it wouldn't be worth holding on to anything because you never know what could be a Yu-Gi-Oh card that was $100 right. One day and it's 25 cents the next.
Right, because they need to change the rarity for limited, and so they take something that's fairly expensive and print it as an uncommon.
Yeah, imagine if every card were the same rarity. If every card were 10 cents, who would get you your cards? You would just have to buy booster after booster because nobody would bother. Am I going to look through thousands of stacks of cards for a dime? For a $1 order of 10 cards? Like, it's just not worth it. Hmm. So you would basically, there would be no impetus for anybody to sit on the inventory and to get you the cards you wanted.
All good arguments. That's great. Hadn't really considered that the dealers are the way that players tend to get their cards. Of course, you know, it makes sense when we're talking about packs. Of course, you go to a dealer, you go to a store. But when you do need to tune your deck, when you want to build a specific deck, who are you going to go to? You're going to go to the dealers.
Huh. Yeah, packs are a super inefficient way to get cards.
Yeah, it is. This is why we have you on the show. Now, we have a couple of questions from our patrons. We have a Patreon page. That pronunciation actually drives people crazy for some
Patreon?
Reason. Patreon? Patreon, yeah.
Is it?
Opposed to Patreon.
Yeah, they're patrons.
Yeah, they're patrons.
Don't patronize me.
Exactly. So, patron... I couldn't
Say
even
patron.
Do the joke without breaking. Patron Bradford Heron wants to know if it's worth it to buy a box of EMA if you're looking for EDH staples.
Yeah, that's the only reason. Like, if I mean, what staples are you looking for? Like, what's that great that's at Mythic? I honestly, if you're dropping $250, how many EDH staples reasonably you're going to get? You're going to get two or three Mythics in the box, probably. And, like, half the Mythics are just crap in EDH. And you're going to get a bunch of rares, half of which are banned in EDH or just not that good. So, man, I don't know. I think you're not going to have a very easy time of breaking even. So if what you're trying to do is just get playable cards, what do you not have that you're going to be able to get in this set? You know, so what are you buying a box to have your $15 or $10 or $12 booster pack be cheaper than just buying the single? Like, what EDH card do you want that's more than the cost of a booster pack? Because that's the only efficient way to do it. So if you consider Jace the Mind Sculptor an EDH staple, or Sneak Attack, or Natural Order, or Mana Vault, or Mana Crypt, sure. But, like, I think you're just going to bust, like, a ton of Nev's Discs and, you know, Giant Solifuges, and it's going to be tough to break even. So the value you're going to get has got to feel worth it. And, man, I don't know. For EDH staples, I'm inclined to say probably not. Like, it would be cool to get, like, a foil Vindicate or something like that. But for the most part, the stuff you're going to be really excited about opening is stuff you're going to want to sell to try to recoup. So I don't know what all I would be super happy to open and keep if I dropped $250 to $350 on a box of this. So I don't think it's necessarily super great for EDH staples, unfortunately.
But is there a price that you'd be excited about?
I mean, if I pay under MSRP, great, because then, like, you can't lose. But there are just... I think you might think of the cards you could get if you just spent $250 on singles, especially after this set comes along and brings some of those prices down in the short term. So, why wouldn't you just buy a playset of Vampiric Tutor for, $50 in a couple of weeks versus paying $300 on a box trying to get one copy?
What do you think is the optimal time to pick up singles? A couple of weeks after?
Peak supply.
And when will that be for EMA, do you think?
I don't know, man. I think this is going to be a real short window if Modern Masters 2 is any indication. Probably like a month in. Because I don't... How long will this be drafted? Like 1 week or two? Like maybe 2-3 weeks right. in. It's going to be a real brief window. But I think at peak supply when people have drafted all they're going to draft, you know, and people have packed all they're going to pack, and then the stores start to be like, oh, we've still got all these boxes left. I think that's the time to buy singles, because I think that's when they'll be at their lowest. So honestly, if you're looking for EDH staples, I would just be happy that this set is going to lower the cost of some of those singles and just to buy the singles. I'm not super happy about buying a box of this for EDH. But I'll draft it for sure, because it's going to be fun to draft. You can win prizes. And you can just rare draft. So I think playing it's worth, if you drop $50 on a draft, that's very dear. And I know a lot of Magic players are broke college students, and I think $50 for a draft is insane. But I think it's worth the experience, and I think you have an easier time breaking even on a draft, especially if you draft a decent deck and do well and have a shot at some prize packs, than you will at just paying $250, $350 on a box.
Yeah, someone I regularly draft with. And by regularly, I mean I have drafted with this person in the last 6 months. Actually has pre-ordered 6 cases of this, so we'll be drafting a bunch of it.
More than stores can get. That's pretty insane.
Yeah, isn't it? Nate, why don't you ask the next few questions from our patronesses?
Patron Zach Williams wants to know, what kind of value should I expect from a sealed EMA box, and is it worth keeping one as an investment for later?
I don't know what kind of value. It's tough to say. Because I think there's so much of the value in rare right now. That gets smashed a lot faster than mythic. Because I think there's balance. There's World Gorger Dragon. There's Necropotence. And I think there's one more that's just terrible at Mythic in terms of... Oh, Sphinx's Steelwind was already $1 before it got printed in the set at Mythic. Maelstrom Wanderer is not great. I think there are so many crap Mythics in this set. And you have to have crap Mythics. But that doesn't change the fact that that hurts the value. I don't know. If you look at a box of Modern Masters 1, which is now... How many years old? 3? And it's only $350. I think it could take quite a long time, if that's any indication. And it's not the greatest indication, but if that's any indication, I think it could take longer than you might be willing to wait, especially if you have to pay above MSRP on the box. So the math kind of sucks for this set. I think it's mostly going to be I played the booster pack lottery, and holy hell, I got a foil Caracas. I think it's going to be that kind of set. And it's going to be hey, look, there's so many worn Power Stones that all of a sudden they're reasonable. So I don't necessarily like this as an investment, necessarily. I think it'll get to 400 faster than Modern Masters 1, but I don't know that that's necessarily the best endorsement of the set, saying something like that. I'm sorry if it comes across like a downer. I'm generally in favor of this set, but I think... The economics of it aren't necessarily what people want.
Yeah, TCG has a box of original Modern Masters for starting at $384, including
shipping. And they're even cheaper on eBay.
Oh, yeah.
Patron David Dorn II asks, I've recently started playing Magic. I've started listening to Brainstorm Brewery, but if I want to be smarter about my MTG purchases, where else should I listen?
I feel like that's a trick question. No, I don't know, man. I think there are some other finance podcasts out there that are trying to do something different from what Brainstorm Brewery is doing. I think MTG Price's Fast Finance is a pretty decent finance podcast. I think Cartel Aristocrats has got a lot of guys I like on it. But honestly, if you're just starting out, like maybe a finance podcast isn't even necessarily what you need. I think what we try to do on Brainstorm Brewery is I think we found that finance people don't really like podcasts as much as like podcast people want something that tells them how to be a little bit smarter. So I think the more hardcore a finance podcast is, the less appealing it is going to be to you, just because what you're trying to do, which is not spend too much, you're trying to buy your cards at the right time and sell them at the right time. They're not really going to cover what you want necessarily. So I don't know that a hardcore finance podcast is what you need necessarily. I think, I don't even think articles are necessarily what you want to be doing. I think what we try to do on Brainstorm Brewery is be the podcast for someone like you that just wants to make the game a little bit more affordable. Because especially when you're starting out, they're like, oh, I want to play FNM. How much is a deck? Oh, $480. Okay, great. that's a big initial investment.
Do you think this standard environment is an aberration? Or do you think we'll see it from now on?
I think we'll see it from now on. I don't really know a way around it because they're printing more of every set than they ever have. Every time they make a new set, and there's just so many more people joining. More people play Magic the Gathering than played World of Warcraft at World of Warcraft's peak. That's insane.
Yeah, that's
so crazy. Many people play Magic. So,
what is the current player base size? Last I knew, it was about 12 million.
They estimate it. I don't even know how they do that because so many people don't play Magic in a way that they can be counted. Like, do they go to every kitchen table on the planet? Like, what do? Are they extrapolating for how many booster packs are sold at Walmart? Because they know how many DCI numbers there are, but that's a drop in the bucket. So, right. I don't know how they think they know how many people play Magic, but certainly they know at what rate the game is growing. So I think Standard is just going to be sort of expensive. It's going to be a $200 to $400 format, and that's just going to be a thing. But I think if you can retain some of that value and take it into Modern and take some of those staples and put them in your Modern deck, it makes the initial investment feel less bad. So I think if what you're trying to do is just make paying for Magic cards suck less, I think all you can really do is what you're doing, which is just pay attention. I don't think we're saying anything groundbreaking on Brainstorm Brewery. I think we're just telling people, reminding them to pay attention to stuff that's coming up, and just sort of leveraging some of our experience into stuff that we take for granted. We're just reminding people that that's a thing.
Do you think there's a good rule of thumb where if a card in Standard reaches a certain price, just sell it? Or do you think that's too simplistic?
What are your goals, though?
Well, basically get out while it's high.
Yeah, get out while it's high, but what if you want to play with that card? Like, people lose money on cards all the time. People hang on to stuff way too long because, I know I should sell this card now before rotation, but I want to play this deck up until the last minute. So, people do stuff that's not in their financial best interest just because it's a card game and they're paying to play. So there's a point where you sacrifice your gameplay experience for your financial stability, and what are your goals? If your goals are to not lose too much money playing Standard, your best bet is just not to play Standard at all or never switch decks. So, that's not the best thing for your quality of life. So I think you need to sometimes do stuff that doesn't make sense financially. Just because you're like, hey, I love this deck and I want to keep playing till the last minute, and I'm going to lose value every tournament I take it to. So I don't think a rule of thumb exists because I think there's so much diversity of experience. I think people are doing so many different things with their cards what do you tell them?
I ask in part, it's a little bit selfish because I look at it and I'm like, over time, most of the cards that cost about, 17 or 18 bucks in Standard drop to sometimes even junk rare status, right? Because they're just not playable in Modern, but for that particular environment, they're really good. And I caught actually a surprising amount of flack by daring to sell my Archangel Avacyn for $35 and saying, well, I'll see you when it rotates.
Yeah, I'll see you for $12 at rotation or whatever, and I can just jam it back in EDH. Yeah, exactly. But is it worth the $20 to deprive yourself of playing with that card for 18 months?
Well, also looking at there being a lot of Shadows over Innistrad about to be drafted, and knowing that I would draft at least some of it, there's always the chance, right? And so it's the gambling. It's the, what did you call it, with the pack gamble?
Yeah, the pack lottery.
Yeah, pack lottery. And so I wasn't too upset with it. And ultimately, it's one card. Is it going to make a big difference? Am I likely to play her as a commander? No. And so I looked at it, and I had the temerity to say, I'll see you at $10. And holy boop, did I get flack for that.
Okay. Like, if someone's telling you you did it wrong, they're doing it wrong. So, like, I don't understand why anybody would care.
Yeah.
I think you did a fine job doing that. You definitely made money. If you buy it later.
Yeah, she's
for
$22 right now.
So you made $13 already. Like, you're having that money in the short term to buy stuff that's cheap now that you know is going to be more expensive later. Like, it's, I don't know, man. Like, I've definitely bought cards at the right time and sold them at not the ideal time, but what I did with that money in the short term, I had more money to buy more specs. So, like, again, it just comes back to your goals. I can't answer the question that broadly because there's so many different things you can do with your money and so many different things you can try to accomplish in Magic Finance. I think for the, if you're not trying to buy collections and, you know, have an eBay store, what Magic Finance means to you is like, hey, I want this in EDH, but when do I buy this? Do I wait till rotation? Hey, I think this is real similar to an EDH card. You know, when's a good time to buy this? When's a good time to sell it? And I think there are patterns that stuff follows that we can answer those questions so easily because we've been doing a finance podcast for 4 years worth of rotations and new sets. So we've seen enough patterns to be able to tell people somewhat broadly, but what are you trying to do? You know, are you trying to make money or are you trying to just pay less? And if you're just trying to pay less, bust your booster pack with a $35 angel in it, sell it for $35, buy it for $10 later. And in the meantime, you get $25 to buy another card, buy more packs, play a draft.
And that, because I'm not buying hundreds of copies of a card and I'm not buying people's collections, I looked at it as, well, if I sell this Avacyn now, I can pick her up again when she's less expensive. Even if it's $20, I've made a lot of money off of it. And that allows me to buy a draft, right? Buy into a draft that maybe I wouldn't have done.
I mean, you virtually, it doesn't necessarily feel like it if you don't think about it, but you virtually lose $20 by packing that at $35 and sitting on it.
Yep.
Because as the value goes down, you're losing money. It doesn't feel like it, but it's like a declining stock. You know, you bought high and then sold low. But everyone doesn't want to look at a Magic card like a stock, and I can see that. But it's an asset, and if it's a depreciating asset, just by not paying attention, you lost $20, even though you still have one copy of the card before and you have one copy of the card now. I think it's worth paying attention to, certainly.
So I think we're going to change the overall topic away from MTG Finance to just more fun.
I certainly don't mind that.
Patron David Dorn the second asks,
hey, we already got a question summoned, from this guy. What's he doing?
Yes, he asks again.
All right, he's whatever. Like, I would answer any number of questions from our patrons. So, good on you, David Dorn.
If you were summoned into a fight between two planeswalkers as a 5 CMC 2/1 creature, what is her creature type, color, and abilities?
Why in the world does the planeswalker put me out? Because if a planeswalker put me out, well, no, he said 5 CMC, right? So, like, it's not a planeswalker ability. I'm a 5-mana 2/1. I better do something good, but, like, what do I do? it's certainly not going to be anything physical. So I would assume that I would be blue-green, and I'd like to think that I would draw some cards, but maybe not. I don't know. Like, what would I do in a battle, personally? Like, I'm not returning anything to anybody's hands. I don't know how to do stuff like that. If I could design a 5 CMC 2/1 that feels Jason flavored, I would probably want to return a non-land permanent to its owner's hand and add to my mana pool mana converted mana cost equal to the permanent I returned. So,
oh snap.
Colorless.
That's
all
good.
Colorless, but it, yeah. I bounce something and I get colorless. That can only be spent on... No, let's not put restrictions on it if it's all colorless. So yeah, return target non-land permit to its owner's hand, add to your mana pool. Colorless mana equal to the converted mana cost of that permanent.
Wow, that's an ETB effect?
Yeah.
Wow.
Is that too good? That could be too good. I don't know.
It might be.
Oh well, that's what I would do, man. I don't care if I'm too good. I'll be mythic. I'll be legendary. There you go. This is why I don't design cards, you know? Finkel, when he got his card, Shadowmage Infiltrator, initially he wanted a Wrath of God that was like a colorless, a blue and two white, destroy all creatures, and then untap four lands. That's what he wanted.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why you don't give Magic players what they want. Or they'll do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Patron Mason Talley asks, do you think the upcoming four-color commander set will be good for the format and a sound financial investment?
Yes, no. I don't think that the commander sets have been a sound financial investment since the very first set. They print so many of them. I think you probably buy them just because the cards in there will be good, and I think there'll be a few cards that could go up over time. We're not going to know until we see the spoilers, but honestly, four-color commanders is going to be very good for the set. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if they're going to be four-color in the casting cost, or if they're going to be like mono-white with three-color activations. I don't know if they're going to do a mix of that, but they just have to be good, right? There's no way that they're going to give us five new decks, and there won't be at least 20 good cards, right? 20 good cards for EDH is a lot to ask of any set, you know?
Yeah, it is.
But it seems super doable. And weren't there 20 good cards in Commander 2015? Weren't we super glad to get Marin and Blade of Selves and, Karlov Maserik. And... yeah, yep. Like there were so many good different things. So I have to imagine there will be two or three really good 4-mana spells that are so good they're worth paying that mana. I have to imagine there's going to be some way to fix mana. They're not going to be like, here you go, Vivid Lands, nerd. There's no way. There's got to be good mana fixing. There's got to be a good 4-mana legendary creature that'll just be a sicko general. There's got to be enough stuff that'll be just good for EDH. Like, if the set came out and it only gave us one good card that was used in EDH after this, wasn't that worth it? You know? It's not like we lost anything by them having that set, so it's all upside. It's either going to be there will be good stuff in it or whatever. Who cares? It happened, and let's not talk about it.
So for playability, would you buy all five?
Yeah, I'm gonna.
I'm gonna buy all five as well, and it's because I like to play them all against each other and multiple times and just explore all of that. But I mean, as an investment, would you buy multiple copies?
I haven't honestly advocated buying as an investment. I kind of thought, I have a bunch of the Prosh decks because I thought that would get there, and they just really haven't. They just print so many of these things now, like it's not going to be a thing. You know, you're better, if you're going to speculate on singles, you know, Blade of Selves was a buck on Star City pre-order. So there's going to be something that Star City misprices because they don't know anything about EDH, and that's where your money's going to be. Your money's going to be Primal Vigor was like $4. For like 18 months. And then everyone went, wait, why is this $4? You know? Like, there are going to be cards that it's like, why is this so inexpensive? I guess it needs to correct. So that's your financial opportunity. But the sealed product, it hasn't been a good deal, basically, since you could buy the very first set. Like, the Heavenly Inferno is like $125 or whatever now. You know?
Yeah, it's crazy.
That was a good investment, but like, yeah, that's like saying Golden Age comic books were a good investment, so go buy new comic books. It's a different ballgame now. They're just printing so many of these stupid things, throwing 100 of them in every Target and Walmart, you know. It's not a thing anymore. You're not going to buy them sealed and have it be a good deal, but just buy them and play with them. They're going to be every deck will have something worthwhile in it, so it's just going to be good for the format.
Yeah, I found there are some Walmarts that will repack, or somebody will repack a bunch of these decks for Walmart and sell them that way. And I found Duretti for like $18, right? And that's the one with the worm coil engine.
Yep,
so
with the $15
it seemed
worm
like a no-brainer,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. So you get another copy of Duretti and the worm coil engine alone, and that's the $18.
Scrap Mastery, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't believe how cheap Duretti is.
Yeah.
Because it used to be, like, all our finance rules kind of get broken as Wizards kind of makes us regret saying them. We were just like, man, Hydras are always a good investment. And then they're like, what if we put 10 Hydras in every block? And we're like, no, Hydras are trash now. So we used to be like, man, any Planeswalker under $5, it's going to be $5 eventually. Buy them. And then it was like Tybalt was like the one exception. And now it's like, oh, you know, there's so many cheap Planeswalkers. Like, I can't believe Duretti's like $3. It's insane. It's so good. But you know what? That's just how much of that deck they printed. You know, it wasn't enough to bring Wormcoil down that much, but it certainly was enough to make Duretti worth nothing. So, I don't know. I don't advocate buying them as an investment.
Thank you for that advice. That's pretty good. It's almost the end of the show, and Nate almost always has a card where he highlights some card that's topical, and almost inevitably it hoses me in some way.
Yep.
So, Nate, what do you got this week?
Out of the Eternal Master set, one of my favorite hate cards is Deathrite Shaman. It's around $5 to $7 now. It's a hybrid. It's a black or a green creature elf shaman. Those are both good tribal types. 1/2. He's got a bunch of abilities. You can tap him. Exile target land card from a graveyard. Add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. Is the Gitrog using Drownyard Temple as a crutch and it's got it in the graveyard? Exile it on your turn and get a mana. Pay a black and tap it. Exile target instant or sorcery card from a graveyard. Each opponent loses 2 life. Mm-hmm. Hey, is Mizzix trying to some flashback spell? Exile it at instant speed and they lose 2 life. Pay a green and tap. Exile target creature card from a graveyard. You gain 2 life. So when Phil casts his Mimeoplasm and is selecting his creatures in graveyards, exile one of them at instant speed and gain 2 life. When Sean starts the revolving doors of Sun Titan, Karmic Guide, and Reveil Arc, exile one of them at instant speed and gain 2 life.
You're a bad person.
Anything that's bannable at a format is worth looking at in EDH.
Yeah.
Right? Like Deathrite Shaman,
yeah,
it's so good it's banned in Modern because that's all anybody wanted to do. Hey, it's worth having a look. So, that's a great card. Plus, it's an elf, so that's cool.
Fits into, Nate likes to pronounce Nath as Nath.
Well, Nathan, right?
Yeah.
But I don't say I majored in Math, so I say Nath. Mathematics.
And Mimeoplasm fans rejoice. Because Nate can only exile one of those creatures, and you don't actually have to pick those creatures until the Mimeoplasm enters the battlefield.
Timing.
Just saying. But once it's made the choice, Nate, you can't exile it with a Deathrite Shaman.
So I have to anticipate.
You have to anticipate. That's right. So if you see, I'm not going to say me, but if you see some Mimeoplasm players shopping around, you know, looking at everybody's graveyards. Maybe you should be doing that, too, if you have Deathrite Shaman.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming that Mimeoplasm doesn't kill it outright.
He's certainly good at turning your Terramorphic Expanse and stuff like that into mana. You can just use him as a Birds of Paradise for stuff like that, too. So it's, Deathrite Shaman, he's very good. He's highly played in Legacy, and he's banned in Modern, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah, and with the prevalence of Gitrog monster decks, absolutely worth playing these days.
Well, you play him in the Gitrog deck too.
Yeah.
And against. So, it's solid. I like it. Good hoser.
All right. Good pick, Nate.
All right.
Despite it being aimed right at my heart. Jason, it's been wonderful having you on the show again. I think third time, and this one, my goodness,
this could be a three-parter.
This could be a three-parter. And how can people reach you?
How can people reach me? How can't they reach me? I'm a writer for Gathering Magic, where I write my 75% EDH article series. I'm a writer for MTG Price, where I write a EDH finance series. I'm on Twitter at Jason E. Alt. I'm on Reddit Jason Eyal at MTG. You can email me, ljason17 at Gmail, and I'm on Facebook, I guess.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm just, I do it all. I'm looking to start a new writing project also that I'll be announcing here pretty soon. So basically, I'm pretty easy to get a hold of, and people do all kind of nonsense to get my attention. So if you have any sort of question about 75%, about EDH Finance, about MTG Finance in general, hit me up one of those ways, I guess.
Yep, and as we know, you respond well to criticism of 75% when cast as a joke.
Oh, yeah. I take it in stride. And
Yeah. Because in a text-only format, you can always tell when a person is joking and or just being a little bit sarcastic. And
I don't brook a bunch of jibber-jabber, so...
Jibber-jabber.
That's just how I roll.
All right. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you want to support the podcast for all the good things we put in your ear holes, head over to Patreon. I can't help it, Jason. I'm sorry. Head over to patreon.com/commanderandmtg or give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We love our listeners, and we are incredibly grateful to all our patrons. Patrons exactly like Natalie Gosselin, Joshua Ledwell, and Daniel King. Thank you for your support, everybody. And in the meantime, come playtest with us. Jason, you should come. I realize that we're not doing this on MitGo. We're not doing this on XMage or anything like that, where we get together on Skype and we playtest decks. And that actually helps us in terms of winnowing out the chaff from the wheat of the cards we want to buy. We actually buy a whole bunch of cards as a result. But it would be awesome if you came on and then kind of just were yourself playing sarcastically, responding to questions about 75% while we play. When somebody plays a demonic tutor or a vampiric tutor, you could chime in.
Or
you're always
flip
welcome.
The table. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, sounds good. I'm always I don't get to go to Grands Prix like I used to, so I have more decks than I have opportunities to play them lately, it feels like. So yeah, any chance to play some crads, I'm down.
And we have multiple parents in the group. We actually so we're new parent friendly.
Excellent.
Wow, I'm tired. Our theme song was created for the podcast by Nate Burgess. We like him. Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto with assistance from my wife, Kelly. Special thanks to our tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and of course to Justin for his server space. You can reach us by going to our website, commanderandmtg.com. Our email address is cast@commanderandmtg. You can find us on all the social media by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast. And of course, we will make sure that we put all of your contact information, Jason, in the show notes. And I think it's fair to say that you're kind of a, not that it's diminishing how special your appearances are when I use this term, but you're a show regular now, not just a friend of the show, sir. Our very first regular.
All right, that's good. I don't I'm sure you're losing listeners every time you say that, but you didn't need them anyway.
Well, think of it as we're down to about 25% of the listeners who started the episode. Yeah. Just by dint of every hour we lose 50%.
That's fine. The people who stuck around are your real fans anyway, so
yeah. So we love you people.
I want to apologize for the value that I brought into your dull and meaningless lives.
Oh, every episode is so much fun. And this time around, getting into that little very friendly row with Sean, that was, I don't know, I think I'm going to both cringe and really enjoy hearing it when it hits air.
That's how you know it's a good quality podcast. If you're not laughing and cringing at the same time, was it really worth doing?
Yeah. All right. Well, individually on Twitter, I'm at Ketjack.
Sean is at Copain26. And I am at Mr. Plorg.
And I already told you what I'm at, but apparently it's going to be in the show notes also, so...
Yeah.
You have no excuse not for following me on Twitter.
Absolutely.
Other than you don't want to, but, like, sure, be wrong, I guess.
I love that. Will you take us out?
That's our episode.
Thanks, Jason. It was a pleasure.
Hey, anytime. That's what a regular says, right? Anytime?
Anytime.
Mandarin.
Yeah!
Yeah, sorry for being late, but I wasn't just doing time tonight. I had to host the show because the regular host was out. So I got paid more, so that's good.
Good.
Hooray. Now my computer's all Windows 10 and it's terrible. All my icons are huge and I don't know how to navigate it.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, Windows 10's the worst.
Yeah, I made the mistake of installing it on my son's computer and now he's so upset that it's slowing everything down.
I didn't even want to install it. It just installed itself.
Oh, that's a new thing. You are not allowed to decline it anymore. They actually took the X off the box because it turns out that if you were closing the box, the dialogue that would pop up, it just assumed by default that you wanted to install it. So you had to kind of opt out. And now they took the X away, so you can't accidentally close it and opt in to the upgrade.
Ugh, it's the worst.
It's glorious.